Makeshift Stories is now available on Stitcher Radio on demand. Download the free mobile app today and listen to us anywhere, anytime. There's no more syncing, no downloading, and no wasted memory.
Makeshift Stories presents Somewhere, Sometime, an irregular series of short sci-fi and fantasy stories.
There was a recent study in which a small group of witnesses were shown a short video, then asked to recall its contents. Most of the participants believed that they could accurately remember at least one detail. But when shown the video again, they were surprised to discover that they were wrong. What would have happened if, instead of a professional video, they were confronted with something very indistinct, something in low resolution? In this month's story, two researchers investigating unexplained phenomena are challenged to separate truth from desire and subjective memory. We now invite you to sit back and relax as you listen to Makeshift Stories 64, Low Resolution. Somewhere in some time, the signal-to-noise ratio might be so great that the truth gets lost.
Do you believe in paleo contact, Miss Lynch? Feeling like a deer caught in headlights, Fanola was completely taken off guard by the question. Let me rephrase that. Do you believe in ancient times that the Earth was visited by aliens who helped our ancestors? The man with the Einstein haircut sternly asked, after consulting a list of questions on his handheld.
I've seen all the TV shows and read a few chapters in that book. You know the one,
Fanola hopefully queried.
I think it had the word chariot or fire or something like that in the title.
Her tentative response was met by stony faces in the hiring committee. She tried to recover.
I mean, the TV shows have a lot of experts, ancient alien astronaut experts. I think that's what they're called. So I guess so, sort of.
She hopefully added, not sure what they were expecting.
It might be possible.
There had been precious few jobs since the recession had begun, and the rare person who had money also had the ability to leave and had done so long ago. Those who didn't were still in the city and out of work. Fanola counted herself in this latter group of the newly impoverished, so a chance at a new job, even one as odd as this, was a rare stroke of good fortune. She hoped that she hadn't blown the interview on the first question. The woman on the committee with the bright red hair and the badge identifying her as the director of the Unexplained Phenomena Research Institute, or UPRI, looked at her small screen and asked,
Miss Lynch, have you ever had a paranormal experience or witnessed an unexplained phenomena?
Fanola thought about it, then reluctantly shook her head, feeling her chances of getting the job plummet to zero.
No,
she finally admitted. The members of the hiring committee collectively smiled at her, quietly whispered amongst themselves, then asked her to leave the room. That had almost been 2 months ago, so Fanola was taken by surprise when Elaine, the director of the institute, called and offered her the job of evidence analyst. Apparently, they had been waiting for a donation from an unnamed wealthy celebrity to fund the position.
Why me?
Fanola asked.
Because you're a skeptic, Miss Lynch. We need someone like you to help verify our findings. A background in statistics, library science, databases, and you're not a believer. You're a perfect fit. We are a serious organization, and we need the world to listen to us. Once we've done our due diligence, and that's what you'll be helping us with, we'll release our results for others to scrutinize.
Elaine replied in a calm, professional voice.
What have you found?
Fanola stopped herself from adding, lizard people onto the streets of L.A.?
I can't tell you, Miss Lynch. We need you to look through our evidence and come to a conclusion on your own. We're not a Warren Suffelt. We're not about to dig up downtown Los Angeles looking for a lost reptilian civilization or try to sneak into Area 51 looking for alien tech. You'll be helping us uncover the truth. It's a great opportunity.
Fanola shivered. She was sure she hadn't mentioned the lizards out loud. However, she needed the job, even if it would never appear on her resume. So Fanola simply asked, When can I start? As it turned out, the Institute paid exceptionally well, and from the decor of the offices, Fanola determined that UPRI must have more than a few wealthy benefactors. She felt exceptionally lucky landing the job, and the afterglow of steady money again made her unusually optimistic, but the mood around the office was an odd mixture of apprehension and muted anxiety. She tried to lighten the atmosphere with a joke at the weekly staff meeting, jesting that the organization appeared to be throwing money away like there was no tomorrow. No one had laughed. Instead, everyone in the room looked suspiciously around at each other. Fanola reflected on her apparent faux pas as she sat in her cubicle in a converted warehouse located in one of the partly gentrified areas of the city's now mostly abandoned business district. A pigeon was carefully negotiating the brick ledge outside the large fourth-floor window beside her cubicle, distracting Fanola away from what seemed like an endless series of fuzzy photos of innocuous smudges, usually located in the sky. At the moment, life was good, she thought, then returned to her work.
Blurred oval, bright, clear sky, no detail, late afternoon, Fanola typed into the entry field and was about to save the newly tagged image when Anton, the project lead, walked unannounced into her cubicle, making her jump.
Have you finished classifying the 1950s photos yet? Anton hopefully inquired.
Son of UPRI's director, Anton had his mother's delicate features and square face, except he wore glasses and had auburn rather than flaming red hair that he kept swept up in a large gelled wave on the top of his head, which Fanola thought made him look a bit like a character from an anime. The image made it difficult to talk to him without breaking into a smile, which only irritated Anton, especially when they're discussing work.
It seems like there's tens of thousands of these things, and most are really grainy and fuzzy. I've never seen so many bad photographers in my life.
Fanola tried to joke, then noticed that Anton wasn't amused.
Oh, sorry. Just joking. If the rest are like the ones I've already completed, I should be able to get them tagged by the end of the week. But really, there's not one clear shot in the whole archive.
Those are the ones we're interested in, Anton coolly replied. If you can get them done sooner, let me know. Oh, and you still need to tag all the orb photos and ancient artifacts. We're hoping to start the analysis before the end of the month.
Why the rush?
Fanola asked. Anton looked at her for a second, then turned and left, leaving Fanola's question hanging in the air.
Hey, what's the big deal around here about time anyway?
Fanola called to his receding back, then turned to her screen and brought up the next photo. A line of distant trees partly obscured in the morning mist, with an indistinct gray ball apparently hovering a third of the way up in the sky. Fanola typed,
Misty, early morning. Sphere. Blurry. No detail.
The orb photos proved to be remarkably consistent, like spots of dust on a camera lens, which Fanola secretly assumed they were. Orbs floated like ghostly balloons through hundreds of photos, and again, the now ubiquitous, what she playfully called the Ufio effect, or unaccounted failure of automatic focus, automatic exposure, and operator error at the crucial moment, combined to make these some of the fuzziest and most indistinct images she had tagged to date. In a moment of impulsiveness, Fanola had printed out her acronym in large bold letters and had posted it to her cubicle wall. When she moved on to working with the Unidentified Objects in Ancient Art collection, she found that the Ufio effect was predictably at work there as well, in the smudges of paint or ill-defined circular objects and carvings. Fanola was working on a photo of the famous flying saucer in the Baptism of Christ by the Dutch artist Art de Geller when Anton arrived an hour late for their daily status meeting. Looking a bit flustered, his usual guard was down. Anton threw himself into a chair that he had wheeled into the small cubicle and stared questioningly at Fanola. Fanola chose to break the awkward silence first.
Hey, Anton. Let me tell you what I've already figured out without even doing a formal analysis. Bad photography and unexpected phenomena go hand in hand.
Fanola expected Anton to react, but instead he smiled and said,
"Yeah, that's really interesting, isn't it? We've always wondered why the phenomena affects recording technology so adversely."
Fanola couldn't help herself and audibly groaned,
"Yeah, I wonder."
"And that's what we hired you for, to wonder and question. Look, I apologize for being late. It's near the end of the day. Why don't I take you for coffee around the corner, and you can give me your status report, and then you can go home."
This was the first time Anton had seemed even remotely human to Fanola. He was usually distant, anxious, and secretive, like everyone else at the Institute.
"Why not? That'd be nice,"
she found herself replying. Anton looked over at Fanola's screen and nodded his head, chuckling.
"Ah, the famous UFO in de Gelder's painting of the baptism. We'll talk after you've finished the analysis. Come on, let's go."
Fanola logged off her computer and followed Anton out of the office. Fanola and Anton turned the corner, passing a fading sign in front of an empty lot announcing a new luxury condo that would never be built. The sign had been partly papered over by posters announcing the end of the world 3 months ago.
"They've got that wrong again,"
Anton nervously laughed. But there was something in his tone that made Fanola suspect that her colleague agreed with everything but the date. Finally, they arrived at the coffee shop, an upscale chain with the welcome familiar smell of freshly roasted coffee wafting from its open doors. Apparently, most of the people on the street were more interested in getting home than stopping for an espresso, so the place was empty. Anton and Fanola ordered, then retreated to a table near the front windows.
"You've done a great job on the orb photos," Anton began. "But you still need to get all the other sources tagged."
"Why always a rush?"
Fanola quizzed again. Instead of answering, Anton nervously stood.
"I see our coffees are ready. I'm going to get them."
Fanola watched him walk to the counter where a barista had placed two dainty steaming ceramic cups. Except for the hair, outside of the Institute, you couldn't tell that Anton spent his time chasing down flying saucers and ghosts. He looked almost normal, she decided. As Anton turned with the coffees in his hands, he saw Fanola staring at him and smiled. Embarrassed, she turned away to look out the window. Anton slid into his chair, pushing one of the cups over to Fanola.
"You need to understand something about me and the other people at the Institute. We believe in what we are doing."
He emphasized the words believe and doing.
"I already gathered that,"
Fanola mumbled as she took a tentative sip of the steaming drink.
"But it goes deeper, Fanola. My mother started the Institute before I was born. My father was the head of field research. He disappeared while he was on an investigation while I was 5.
"Sorry, I didn't know."
"It's been one of the unspoken missions of the Institute. My mother is determined to discover what happened to him. Look, growing up around my house, you could never say anything that might challenge the belief that there's something out there beyond our senses and our understanding. In hindsight, I now realize that not to believe was to admit my father had simply left us."
"Are you hinting that you have doubts?"
Fanola exclaimed in surprise.
"I went through all those archives myself."
Anton paused to take a sip of his coffee, then began to unconsciously push the cup slowly around the table with a forefinger.
"But I'm too close to the whole thing to be objective. Like I said, I grew up hearing about it, breathing it every day. I'm not a skeptic. I want to believe it's true. But I've never experienced anything personally. So I need something more concrete to confirm our conclusions. That's why I convinced the Institute to hire an outsider like you. Someone to help separate desire from truth."
Fanola felt the sudden weight of responsibility pressing down on her. Anxiously, she asked,
"So what truth am I supposed to find?"
"You know I can't tell you, Fanola. That would bias the results. All I can say is that the frequency of the reports have been on the rise over the last couple of years."
"Duh. Anton, there's more people walking around with cameras,"
Fanola cynically replied. Anton looked puzzled.
"Come on, Anton. Everyone has a mobile these days,"
she explained.
the chances for bad fuzzy photos has increased exponentially.
Anton frowned. No one at the Institute carries one. They can be tracked.
Fanola blew out her cheeks.
By who? The government?
No, was all Anton volunteered. My father was carrying one when he disappeared.
Oh,
Fanola whispered.
After the meeting in the coffee shop, Anton seemed to lighten up, and Fanola began to like him and actually looked forward to their status meetings. It took her another 2 weeks to finish the painting and ancient artifact tagging. 2 weeks of fuzzy smudges in the background of medieval paintings, photos of innocuous shapes on ancient monuments, and badly drawn, unexplained figures in all the illustrations. Fanola had seen much of the so-called evidence before in TV shows that claimed the existence of everything from dimensional portals to ancient invaders from space. She was looking at a well-known Mayan relief on her screen that some experts were convinced was an illustration of an ancient astronaut in a space capsule when Anton snuck up behind her.
You know too much, Miss Lynch. You must come with me, Anton playfully said in a mock robotic voice. Fanola jumped.
Hey, don't sneak up on me like that again,
she angrily reproached. Anton ignored her reaction and slid into the Nordic-looking plastic chair Fanola now kept in her cubicle for their meetings. She had figured out that these little pranks were his way of showing that he liked her. In many ways, Anton had never grown up. But then, she concluded, what chance did he have with the Institute for a parent?
Anton asked.
I think that before, let's say about 1960, before space capsules had been invented, it was just a Mayan figure sitting in a throne.
Fanola had the computer rotate the picture to the vertical to make her point.
How about you?
I think you're right.
Surprised, Fanola wheeled around to face Anton.
Really?
Really. Just because I believe there's some truth out there that's beyond our physical perception doesn't mean I believe in everything.
Anton smiled in a way that suggested more.
Anyway, there's an international conference coming up in a week. My mother and the board want initial results to be presented at it. I know it means long hours, but we'll pay overtime.
But what if the analysis doesn't give you the results you were expecting?
Fanola questioned. Anton leaned back, forcing the dainty-looking chair to balance on its hind legs.
Why don't we run the correlations and find out? He confidently suggested.
Correlations?
Fanola tentatively asked.
Yes, the tags you added to each of the archive entries and our image recognition system. Human versus machine perception. That's why we couldn't tell you very much. We needed your objectivity. But now that you've completed tagging, I can tell you this. Those TV shows about ancient aliens and the paranormal? We funded them.
Why?
Fanola skeptically questioned.
All that stuff in the archaeological archives is just noise to keep the amateurs moving in the wrong direction. You'll see when we run the analysis. The noise will drop away.
And you made me tag all that stuff?
Fanola angrily demanded.
Of course. You needed to include the fake data to help validate the truth.
Anton responded, started to get up, then added,
Come on, let's run the data now.
But it's almost six.
Fanola protested.
I'll triple your rate if you stay,
Anton almost pleaded. Fanola sat staring at the Mayan relief on her screen, then shrugged.
Sure. Okay. But I want to ride home if it's after dark when we're finished.
They moved two terminals into the boardroom and worked there. Importing Fanola's tags into the analytics program took a few hours. Pointing the image analyzer to the photo archive proved to be easier. But it was still nearly midnight by the time they had finished. Anton smiled as he touched the button on one of the terminal screens to start the processing, then leaned back in his seat to wait. 20 minutes later, the analysis was scrolling down the screens, displaying matches between Fanola's tagged images and the imaging system's algorithmically selected choices. Each fuzzy picture bore a striking similarity, light or dark, indistinct circular shapes hovering in the air, and in each case, the bad photographer claimed that they had fallen, or walked, or had been mysteriously dragged through that spot
into another dimension, world, or time. As Fanola read through the data, Anton stood up and backed away from the screen, looking as if he had just won the lottery. "Fanola, do you understand? Do you get it now?" he excitedly asked.
"Get what?"
Fanola said, without turning away from the monitor.
"That they all have stories about people falling through those fuzzy spots?"
Undaunted, Anton added, "Don't you see it? Those spots are not bad photography. They are places where our universe is starting to decay, to wear thin. And when that occurs, a person can pass through. And that's what we've been trying to keep hidden, trying to hide by adding all that noise. Ghost stories, ancient aliens, and stuff like that. There'd be panic if people knew. Something's up, Fanola. We think that our universe may be starting to tear itself apart."
In a sudden flash of insight, Fanola finally thought she understood Anton.
"That's what you want to believe happened to your father, isn't it? You want to believe that he fell through one of those and wasn't able to get back,"
she accused, pointing to a fuzzy gray spot in the photo that was currently on one of the screens.
"You want to believe that he didn't intentionally abandon you. As much as you want to believe, Anton, it doesn't make it real. They're still just bad photos, mistakes, or intentional setups. Look, I like you, and I can't even begin to understand what it must have been like to lose a parent. But worn spots in the universe? I just don't buy it."
Her voice trailed off.
"Look, it's past 1 in the morning, and the transit has stopped running."
Anton quietly sat for a moment, then asked, "I said I would get you home. How far away do you live?"
"On the other side of the park, about 2 kilometers.
"I'll walk you home. Then come back here and write up the report. I'm too wired to sleep anyway."
It was getting close to 2 in the morning by the time they left the building. The streets were empty and wet. It had rained hard at one point in the evening, leaving puddles of water on the sidewalks. A steady drizzle misted the air, diffracting the sickly sodium vapor streetlights, tinting everything in a surreal color. Fanola zipped up her coat against the dampness as they walked through the deserted canyon of office towers toward the park that separated the decaying business district from the residential streets beyond. When they arrived across the street from the park, several burnt-out streetlights had thrown the entrance into inky black shadows. A row of dim globe lights faded off into the mist, marking the way through the park.
"We can go around," Anton anxiously suggested.
"No, it'll take another 40 minutes, and the park's paths are lit. Are you scared?"
Fanola teased.
"Even walking slow, it'll only take 10 minutes.
By an unspoken agreement, they both picked up their pace considerably as they crossed the street toward the park entrance. A set of car lights momentarily illuminated the gateway, making it look like a stage set, blinding them as they entered. Their eyes slowly adjusted to the dark again, and the ghostly skeletons of the unlit office towers, along with the orange glow of the street, began to fall away behind them. As they hurried along, the drizzle began to coalesce into a cloud.
"Fog,"
Fanola whispered.
"Anton, are you still seeing an after image from those headlights?"
They walked into a pocket of cool air where the gathering mist seemed to thicken, and Anton suddenly stopped.
"After images?"
He pointed down the path.
"I don't think after images stay in one spot when you turn your head."
"I don't think they grow either,"
Fanola nervously whispered. An indistinct purple spot began to unfold in front of them, its color changing from purple to red to orange to a blinding white, as if it was heating up. Fanola squinted, shading her hands, then dug into her bag for her mobile, snapping several pictures without looking at what she was shooting. Suddenly, the light began to move toward them, and Fanola wanted to run, but found her legs wouldn't respond to her will. There was a crackling sound that rose up into her hearing and seemed to shake the ground beneath her feet, whipping the air around her into little vortices. Instinctively, she reached for Anton's hand, but he was gone. Impossibly, the light brightened, forcing Fanola to close her eyes. The sound enveloped her as it continued to rise in pitch until it seemed to be piercing through her brain. Desperately, she tried to run again, but this time found that she couldn't even move her hands,
and fear swept through her as the world around her slipped away. Her vision iris down, and she lost consciousness. A leaf, blown on the moist night breeze, settled onto Finola's face, tickling her awake. She opened her eyes to see the pale orange underside of quickly moving clouds reflecting the city's artificial nighttime pallor. The scene didn't immediately make any sense.
"Why am I lying on the ground outside at night?"
she asked herself. Then Finola heard footsteps running toward her, and her memory rushed back in. She looked over to see the shadowy figure of Anton lying on his side in the fetal position. He was beginning to move as Finola propped herself up. "Hey, are you two okay?" a voice called out from one of the two rapidly approaching figures. Finola unsteadily got to her feet. She noticed that all the lights along the path had gone out, and in the distance could make out red and blue spots strobing into the gloom of the park from the street beyond. "We were driving by and noticed you go into the park, then saw the flash. A lightning strike, I think," the closest uniform explained. Still recovering, Finola waited for Anton to get up, then walked on wobbly legs, assisted by the police officers, back to the entrance of the park, where an ambulance had arrived. Thinking that they might be in shock, the police ensured that the paramedics thoroughly examined them. Finally, convinced that they were okay, the officers insisted on driving them home. In the back seat of the cruiser, Anton whispered to Finola,
"Don't say anything. They won't believe you anyway. We'll talk in the morning."
The police dropped Finola off at her apartment, and as soon as she fell through the door, she was overwhelmed with a heavy sense of tiredness. So without undressing, she fell onto her bed and immediately drifted off into a deep, dreamless sleep. Finola slept through her alarm. As a result, by the time she managed to get to the office, it was mid-morning. As she walked past the reception, she checked the board to see who was working. Anton had already checked in. Finola didn't want to talk to him yet. She knew what he'd probably say and needed more time to sort things out for herself, so she walked the long way around to her cubicle to bypass his office. After managing to avoid everyone, Finola slid quietly up to her desk, automatically turned on her terminal, then waited for the unavoidable confrontation. Her stomach knotted. She was determined to hold her ground and tell the truth. Like a predictable cliche in a bad movie, Anton was almost immediately behind her.
"Let's go to the boardroom. We need to talk."
Finola noted that he hadn't even bothered to say hello. As soon as the glass door of the boardroom had closed behind them, Anton began.
"Look, about last night. I know how much I want the results to point to a specific conclusion."
He paused, fell into the nearest high-backed leather chair, then leaned forward, placing his elbows on the polished tabletop, and dropped his head into both hands. Tears welled up in his eyes. Finola sank down into a chair across the boardroom table.
"We have to be honest, Anton."
"Yes, we do, don't we?"
Anton reluctantly agreed, then composed himself, straightening his back and lifting his head up to face her.
"About last night, Finola, nothing happened."
"What do you mean nothing? No physical evidence? Look, I took a picture on my mobile."
Finola fished her phone out of her pocket, swiped it on, then pushed the thing across the table at him. Anton instinctively grabbed at the device, preventing it from sliding off the edge onto the floor. Rolling the mobile around in his hand, he stared intensely at Finola.
"What do you think happened?"
he impatiently demanded.
"What do you mean? We encountered one of your events. A hole in reality, I suppose. We fell through it and for a while, well, I don't know, we were somewhere else. Another dimension, a parallel universe or something. And as much as I find it difficult to accept, you were right. They are real, Anton."
Finola's words trailed off as she noticed the brooding expression on Anton's face.
"What's wrong? Aren't you excited? Isn't this what you, your mother, and the Institute have been looking for?"
she impatiently exclaimed.
"But," he hesitantly began, "I experienced nothing, Finola. We were watching that light, then nothing. We both blanked out. That's all."
No, that's not true,
Fenella protested.
We were in another place, for hours. It's hard to describe, completely different from anything I've ever experienced. But we were there, and there were creatures there as well. I can't remember what they said. I think they wanted me to know that everything was going to be all right. I got the impression that they've met us before, that they're there to help us.
Fenella, that's not what happened, Anton sternly corrected. We were stunned by a bolt of lightning that hit and traveled along the ground for a second. That's all.
Look at the picture. It's real,
Fenella stubbornly insisted. Anton stopped rolling the mobile in his hands and looked at its small display. He smiled, turning around for Fenella to see.
It's just another one of your UFO photos, he laughed. Fenella found herself staring at a grainy blur of color, then noticed the date stamp.
What day is it?
She suddenly asked.
The 24th, Anton cautiously replied.
Well, the photo was taken on the 26th, 2 days from now.
The air around her began to thicken into a soft, gray, circular mass. In a sudden panic, Anton reached across the table to grab Fenola's hand.
Thanks for listening to Makeshift Story 64, Somewhere, Sometime, Low Resolution. We hope that you enjoyed this month's story. As always, if you like what we're doing, please tell your friends about us, or write a review on iTunes. We love hearing your comments, so send us an email to makeshiftstories@gmail.com, or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com. The opening and closing theme is Podsafe Music by David H. Makeshift Stories is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, No Derivative License, which means that you're free to share our stories, just remember to credit us and don't alter anything.